anthems and voices of now getting out the truth through the power of song. Song, which someone once defined as a single voice telling the truth.
I smell the familiar odor of tear gas, and there are clouds of white smoke some 100 meters from me, where the Shokovichna Street crosses Institutska.
That is a single voice not singing, but the story he tells from the streets of Kiev in Ukraine has been heard by thousands of Rapt followers, listening and watching his online reports this week from the midst of some of the worst violence in Kiev since World War II.
I'm walking along the central street, Khreshchatyk, towards the central square, well known now in many countries as Maidan. A couple of blocks down from Maidan, I see black smoke rising into the air, and there are hundreds of people, mostly men, some of them in self-made body armor with baseball bats and iron rods and helmets and all kinds of stuff that they think may protect them in the case of clashes.
He's Andriy Kulikov, one of the voices of public radio, public media being born in the midst of a revolution, broadcasting in English and Ukrainian. The podcasts of Andriy and his colleagues have created a crowdsourced media channel that has spiked its audience to tens of thousands when it's occasionally heard on traditional radio. Their mission is bringing firsthand accounts of the story to the outside world. Andriy Kulikov joins us now from Kiev. Andriy, welcome.
Hi.
Can you describe what's been going on the last 24 hours? You've seen and have had to broadcast some very harrowing reports.
After the immense shock, people started to come back with the thoughts of how to build our life back. Of course, there's a feeling of overwhelming mourning and grief, but still there's a glimmer of hope. People stood in Maidan counting their dead, and they prayed, and they cried, and they were and still are very resolute to stand there until their requirements are fulfilled. And of course, everybody is very much following the events in Verkhovna Rada, Ukraine's parliament, and around it. And they also paid quite an attention to the rather unexpected statement by President Yanukovych, who said that he initiates early presidential elections.
Do you think this is a capitulation, or do you think this is another delaying tactic?
Actually, neither nor. Because in my view, early elections for Mr. Yanukovych give quite a chance to claim back his power in a legitimate way, as long as this can be considered legitimate after all the bloodshed that we witnessed or that we lived through. Because it is exactly because of this bloodshed that part of the country thinks that it's not the authorities who are guilty of it, but those who came to protest, those who came to defend their rights. And very many people in some parts of the country and in some social strata are scared of what's been happening, and they may tend to vote for a guy with a strong hand, you know. I think my personal impression is that if the opposition were to prepare for regular elections in an insistent and methodical way, they would have stood a better chance to win it.
You are a public radio correspondent affiliated with 10 other journalists or so who have begun broadcasting on the internet, really, as this unrest began. And we spoke actually with someone from Canada who we're pretty convinced is one of your most loyal listeners and viewers, as well as to other internet broadcasts coming directly from Kiev. Her impression was that the authorities and the protesters are engaged in a level of violence that the cameras and being under the scrutiny of the eyes of the world does not constrain at all. Nobody feels they're going to be held accountable, that this violence is just unbridled. How can there be reconciliation if that is the case, Andriy?
That's the question that I ponder every minute of the last days and even before, because there was a premonition that this was going to happen. But Ukrainians and Ukraine have gone through so many similar happenings in our history that sooner or later I think this can happen. How to do this? One of the things is to try to talk to each other. A very huge problem in Ukraine is that we're sort of narrowing our vision and that we do not talk to each other as much as we should. That's one of the reasons we set this public radio on the internet, because we see, I and my colleagues see, that many channels and many radio stations tend to adhere to only one point of view and do not offer the range of opinion. So I think that with the help of dissemination of objective information from both sides of the barricades, we can finally overcome this difficulty. This will take a lot of time and a lot of effort, but I'm pretty sure this can be done. And I've been in between the lines. I've been in between, standing just between the lines of protesters and between the lines of police. And I know that even at the last moment, they think before they hit each other. So we have to catch this last moment and help them to understand that it's not in their interests to be enemies.
We're talking with Andriy Kulikov, who's a public radio Ukraine correspondent, host of a major political talk show on one of the major television channels in Ukraine, ICTV. You know, a narrow point of view on radio, Andriy, is not just a problem in Ukraine. It's a problem we have here in the United States. Let's talk a little bit about the opposition. You've mentioned that a vote for Yanukovych, on some level, may be a vote for a return to stability. I'm wondering if the opposition has, and we're asking everyone this, has the opposition gained credibility through this violent period, or have they lost credibility through this violent period?
They gained some and they lost some. They gained credibility in terms of that they showed that they are going to hold their ground no matter what. And quite a lot of people who were sort of mild supporters of the opposition have seen that those guys are ready to risk not only for themselves but also for people who follow them. On the other hand, they lost some credibility, because although they seem to present a united front on many occasions, in some cases you can see contradictions and hesitation on their part, and many people do not like this. Many people would demand or would require one strong leader on the side of the opposition.
On the ground in Kiev, we're speaking with Andriy Kulikov, public radio Ukraine correspondent. This is The Takeaway. Andriy, we're asking also the question about really the context in which you're broadcasting. Tell us a little bit about the growth of these broadcast channels, internet broadcasts, and live streaming from Kiev. Has it had an impact? Has it changed things? Has it brought the world into the streets of Kiev?
I would like to think that it has done all those things that you mentioned. I think we and other colleagues on the internet and live streaming did have an impact. I cannot measure it now, but, well, I know that, for instance, Hromadske TV and other internet television operations attract dozens, if not hundreds of thousands of watchers, viewers. Of course, you have to take to keep in mind that there are difficulties and hindrances, and not everybody sees everything that they show or this kind of stuff. I know that we are listened to. I know that our podcasts are listened to by several thousand people every day, sometimes more, sometimes less. So there is an impact. I strongly believe that not a single word on radio goes into vacuum.
Is there a song, a music, a an anthem of this revolution? Radio is always looking for the music in the voices of protest. What have you found?
Well, we found quite a lot, and we actually have an almost everyday item, which is called Musical Voices of Maidan, Maidan being a Ukrainian word for square, the independent square. Mostly young people, but also some mature musicians are writing songs or rewriting lyrics to their songs, which correspond to the feelings that many people are experiencing now. And pretty much every day you can hear a new song on, in our podcasts about this. Of course, when we started to do this, we experienced an influx of letters and MP packages from our listeners and musicians who told us, please play our music on air, please put it on podcast. And that's when one of my colleagues said, now we are a real radio.
So can you give us a lyric, one lyric before we go, and translate it for us, if we might hear the voice in the way in which it's being heard there in Independence Square?
One of the songs that we featured was stand up, don't stand on your knees, and something like this. I can send you an MP file, and I'm pretty sure that the musicians won't mind if it sounds on your waves.
That's great. We'd love that. We'd absolutely love that. Andrei Kulikov, a Ukrainian correspondent, host of a major political talk show on ICTV in Ukraine, one of the people who's created the sense of public radio from the middle of the unrest. Andrei, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We have given you a view from the streets of Kiev, where the violence of earlier this week has given way to a guarded hope with a political compromise. Will it hold? Early elections? Will they be early enough? The European Union has said it is moving forward with sanctions against those in Ukraine responsible for the violence, including travel bans and the freezing of assets. A more global view now of the situation in Ukraine with Serhii Plukhii, professor of history and director of the Ukrainian Research Institute at Harvard University. His new book, The Last Empire, The Final Days of the Soviet Union, is out in May. Professor, welcome to The Takeaway.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
What do you make of the last 24 hours, the idea of early elections, the idea that there may be enough of a concession from Yanukovych to actually calm things down?
All of this is, of course, very positive news. The fact that they stopped shooting people on the streets of Kiev, this is positive in its own right. Plus, we have a resolution of the parliament that prohibits use of military force in Kyiv and in other places in Ukraine. There are also signs that President Yanukovych is prepared to have early elections later this year. The big question is that none of that is finalized at that point, and it is not clear whether people on the streets of Kyiv will take the deal that was negotiated by the leaders of the opposition, president, and intermediaries coming from European Union and Russia.
One thing we've been told is that Yanukovych appears to have chosen precisely the moment that might favor him politically, because so many Ukrainians are weary of this violence and will vote for him as a vote for a return to some kind of stability. What do you make of that?
What he is prepared to do is to have elections in December of this year, and we are now only in February. So many people are suspicious that basically he is going to use whatever time will be left before the elections, to solidify his power. So again, given how things develop now, with what speed, this additional 10 months, it's a long, long period in political terms.
And Professor, we expect to be hearing, really over the course of the weekend, reports of what the protesters and the opposition's reaction is to all of this. How difficult is that going to be to decipher, in the sense that there are so many different voices speaking for the protesters, for the opposition? How do we decipher all this?
What we hear now from the streets of Kyiv is that people who were involved in protests and then were shot at, and close to 100 people died, they want the resignation of the president now. So I think it will be a hard sell for them to say that, okay, you'll have to wait for another 10 months and go to the elections. So we have still at least a few difficult days ahead, but maybe weeks and months.
Well, that leads to the question that we've really been asking all week, and we've gotten very different answers. But it seems like there's a real challenge for Ukraine to get past this disillusionment with the government regarding corruption, and maybe even more difficult for the people of Ukraine to get past the reconciliation that's going to be required to deal with all of this violence between the government and the protesters. Is the government strong enough to actually withstand that level of redemption and reconciliation that's going to be required here?
When we talk about reconciliation, normally what we have in mind, the conflict of one part of the country with another, one social group with another. What we witness on the streets of Kyiv today is the government in conflict with its own people. So it is not like there are self-mobilization on the two sides, and then what will be needed a reconciliation. So the situation is more complex, but is also simpler in a certain way. So the government has to be accountable to its own people. So new elections, and as soon as possible, I believe, can be the solution. So not in December, but again, within maybe next to 3 months.
Emotionally, how have you responded to the images coming out of Kyiv? And as director of the Ukrainian Research Institute at Harvard, you know, there are pages of history being written and rewritten now in Ukraine that I suspect touch you very deeply.
Absolutely. I'm watching it, that I'm following that with disbelief. No one predicted that, including people here at our institute. Again, Ukraine for the last 20 plus years had a very peaceful record in terms of resolution its crises. There would be early elections. The presidents would pass peacefully power from one to another. So it came as a complete surprise and shock. And on the top of that, the number of people that were killed, especially yesterday, one of them was a young professor of history in the Ukrainian Catholic University, the university with which we and our institute have really close links. So it's heartbreaking to see what is going on. And again, I couldn't imagine anything like that happening.
You know, you looked around the world in 2010 and you saw all of this democratic unrest and calls for democracy in the Middle East. And it seemed very, very heroic and positive. It certainly didn't turn out that way in places like Egypt and Tunisia. Looking around today in Kyiv and in Venezuela and Thailand, are these all one-offs? This is a much darker moment, it seems, for the world than the heroism we were speaking of back in 2010. What are your thoughts?
On the one hand, all of these events have one thing in common, and that thing in common is that the political process doesn't work or didn't work in the countries that were affected by violent protests. So people had to go to the streets to get their voice heard. So on the other hand, there are, of course, differences between what is happening today in Ukraine and what is happening in Venezuela, for example, where it's shortages and lack of freedom of speech that forced people to go on the streets in Ukraine. Again, it was a relatively prosperous period of time. The freedom of speech was under threat, but again, it was a corruption that was major issue. So from that point of view, maybe there is a little bit more in common between today's Ukraine and Thailand than between Ukraine and Venezuela.
Serhiy Plukhy is professor of history and director of the Ukrainian Institute at Harvard. His new book, The Last Empire, The Final Days of the Soviet Union, is out in May. Professor, thank you so much.
Thank you.